Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. I'm still alive. This show still exists. And I'm here taping an episode with my friend and coworker, Lindsay Loveridge. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey.
Sorry for the extended hiatus. Things have been kind of a mess, but they're not a mess anymore. So the plan is to bring the show back from the dead and once again do it every week. So you'll probably see an episode next week. The week after that is AX, so what the plan is to run audio of our ANN panel. We're also doing a panel on, so it is, convention season is right around the corner, as I am sure you know.
It's terrifying.
But
I love it.
I can't do the thing where I'm like, oh no, it's the end of the world. Like, we've done this so many times, and AX has grown to the size of San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was overwhelming a couple years ago, but now I'm used to the overwhelming. So it's like, all right, well, it's going to be 15-hour days every day, and
I have to bring
8 people to cover it, and even that's like not quite enough.
I think it's only my third consecutive year, maybe my fourth year altogether.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So for me, it's still
Went for work?
Yeah, I've only ever gone with work.
Okay. Well, I went once
and then didn't go for a couple more years, and then I think this is my third year in a row now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it would be hard to do it without you there at this point. Like, we really need it. It's like an all hands on deck situation. This would be my 19th consecutive Anime Expo.
Oh man.
Of those, one I went to as a fan. That was the first one. Every single one after that I have been to is press.
Wow.
Some may say I've been doing this for too long. Not me, though.
Nope.
I'm looking forward to the show this year. I'm sure it'll be fine. There's a bunch of premieres. I'm glad they're showing, is it Promare or Promare? How is that pronounced?
I actually don't know the
trigger movie.
I don't know the legit pronunciation of that. And that's actually one of the few things where, if my schedule allows it, I'd like to just watch it.
Yeah, because they're doing a bunch of interviews for that, but they're all before the premiere.
Oh.
So I'm really crossing my fingers that they let us see the film before we sit down with Imaishi and like 4 other guys to talk about this movie that we will have not seen. Like, I'm hoping they come through with a screener. I just want to see it. I'm just very curious.
I want to see it too. I mean, fortunately, we have someone who has seen it and reviewed it for us.
There's already a review on the site. It's already a review on the site, so we've already got that covered. But all this interview stuff, that's a different horse of a different color, as they say. So I'm looking forward to that. There's a bunch of premieres where they're like showing. See, these I'm always a little conflicted on. Like, they'll be like, hey, we're showing the first episode of Fire Force. It's the premiere of Fire Force. Can't miss it. And like the show,
except
just
when
like,
it shows up on Crunchyroll,
well, yeah,
two days
like
later.
Two, yeah, well, not even that, like the next day in a lot of these cases, it's the next day or even like that evening sometimes.
Right.
And like we have to cover it for Preview Guide, which conveniently happens the exact same weekend as we're running around with our heads cut off for AX.
Yeah. Every year,
yeah. It's always a wonderful time at Anime News Network. So I'm always like, well, if they have like a member of the creative staff there and they're going to do Q&A after, and like usually they do, and typically they'll also show more than one episode. So like, I think there's a premiere for some show. Well, like My Hero Academia premiere, they're showing.
Right. That's 3 months in advance.
Yeah, that's 3 months ahead of time. It's the season 4 premiere, but it's also like a 2.5 hour event. So I have to assume they're showing like 2 or 3 episodes.
Maybe. They did the same sort of setup with JoJo last year. And they only showed one episode of JoJo, and there was like an hour and a half of hype before it.
Oh, really?
I know, because I sat through that.
Whoa, I bet that's what it is, though. Because, like, the odds that they have like three or four episodes of a show that's like 3 months out already ready, like, oh geez, like, I'm glad you guys had a chance to work ahead, but it seems unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, they did that with The Ancient Magus Bride. They did show the first three episodes, and it was, I think that show premiered in October, so they had it all really ready. And
that was that AX or Crunchyroll?
That was AX.
That was AX. I guess that could.
Yeah, and George Wada, I remember George Wada came out and he was like, yeah, you know, we ran the animators into the ground and all they ate was energy bars or something like that.
Cool. Don't do that. Yeah. I would rather only see one episode than you murder your employees.
Like, please.
I only just whatever they can make in a normal 8 to 9 hour workday is fine.
Yeah.
Please don't murder your employees to entertain me.
Please.
It means there's blood on your hands and mine.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here watching
don't
this.
Don't make
now.
Me complicit.
Yeah. So it really could be either one. I think the only. So with My Hero Academia, they've got the premiere for that early. And then the only other one that I think is early is they've got, I'm not going to remember the entire title, but it's that Fate spinoff starring Waver Velvet. They've got the first two episodes of that.
Wait.
So it's the first one actually premiered early. Like,
which one is that?
It's like Fate, Zeppelin, Grace Note.
Okay. Shit,
yeah.
That's not on
I'm
the
like,
schedule.
I know I'm not going to remember what that is.
That's not on the schedule yet. I'm going to have to go in and put it in there.
Yeah they're showing the first two episodes of that. At first I thought it was gonna be the first one. I'm like, oh, we don't have to do that because they streamed that on Crunchyroll early for some reason a while ago, so we already
is that a summer show.
It is a summer show.
Oh, okay, well,
yeah,
well, we'll see. Anytime it's like it's airing this summer, you know,
yeah.
Our resources are already stretched pretty thin at this
right.
thing.
The only reason to go would be to get the second episode.
Yeah,
a week early.
Sure. Just, you know,
yeah.
Run general impressions.
Yeah.
It's typically what we
like
do
just
with
like
that.
Q&A and yeah. all that. Jazz.
Yep. That's how it goes. But there's, you know, every day except like it's, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, absolutely jam fucking packed.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. You know, it is 9 to 9 every day. And then there's a ton of interviews sprinkled in there.
Yeah.
But if you want to see us, you can see us. We will be there Thursday, July 4th from 7:30 to 8:30 in Live Programming 5 will be the Anime News Network panel. You can show up, say hi, ask some questions. Hopefully we'll have like some sort of a presentation this time.
I heard there might be a PowerPoint.
Maybe. Perhaps. And then if you want to see me and some other guests, we've got our I'm running my usual Breaking Into Anime Journal. This is How to Get Paid to Write About Anime is the real title of this panel. 4 p.m. on Saturday, July 6th in Workshop 2. It's going to be me, Lindsay, Richard Eisenbeis, yes. You know him, and our friend Jackie Jing from IGN will be there to talk about what you got to do to get some fat cash for writing about anime. Usually people told me they found the panel helpful. And if you are going to be at San Diego Comic-Con on Friday, July 19th, I think it's at 6 p.m. in room 4, I'm going to be on the panel Best and Worst Manga of the Year So Far with Deb Aoki, and they usually have super awesome guests. Last year it was Rachel Thorne, translator. She's awesome. Christopher Butcher was there. He works for Viz. He's a really great guy. And some other folks. It's a really good time. We list our, you know, the best stuff we've been reading and the worst stuff we've been reading. So that's at San Diego on Friday, July 4th, or Friday, July 19th, not July 4th. So I'm going to do my usual one day at San Diego, where I take the train down, do my thing, and just take the train back home at the end of the day, and then that's it. No more. Nothing else at Comic-Con.
We're not doing any coverage of that event either.
Right? Now, well, it's increasingly has become clear that it's kind of a waste of time.
Yeah.
It's kind of a waste of money, really. It's very expensive to cover that show. Getting hotel room is next to impossible, and the anime industry really doesn't show up in the same way that they show up for something like AX, which is only a few weeks beforehand. So, like, there's a few things. Like, Viz will usually bring a big guest to Comic-Con, but I have enough freelancers on the ground there to cover the little things that we do need, but we don't got to send, like, a whole team and get a hotel and, you know, all that
right.
shit. So we've kind of reduced our coverage down to what is sort of reasonable to expect, I think. But like that show is not an it's not an anime show. Last year Funimation really brought out Dragon Ball, but you know, I can get I'll send a freelancer to their activations and, you know, take a look at their events and whatever it is they're doing, but that's all we really need.
Yeah, they had the Viz brought the My Hero Academia creator last year, right?
Yeah, Horikoshi. Yeah. We got that interview, and you know, that so long as I've got someone there to cover it, cool. But like, I don't need to bring like 10 staffers and get like 5 hotel rooms and all that stuff. Like that we don't have to do anymore. I'll also be at Otakon, but I don't have any panels planned. I'm just going to be there covering the show. So if you're at Otakon and you see me, say hello. Okay, so that's all our convention stuff for now. It has been a little while. It's been a hot minute since I've done an episode of this show.
Yeah.
We usually start out talking movies, you know, non-anime. I have been watching anime. We'll get to that. Have you seen any movies lately that you enjoyed?
Oh, geez. Nothing recent, I don't think. I finally, like, sat down and watched Shin Godzilla.
Oh, really? What did you think of that?
It was... Okay, so I could see why a lot of people maybe would be turned off by it because there's not a whole lot of Zilla in it, but I actually found all the bureaucracy parts like very interesting. It's a lot of like fast cuts and just this sort of stark criticism of bureaucracy in general and like Japanese bureaucracy specifically, although I'm sure it can apply to outside of Japan too. Just like, who are you talking to when you're addressing a group, moving from one conference room to a different conference room with the same group of people to try and decide how to deal with a national crisis? It's, you know, very just kind of really taking them to task for that.
It's pretty heavy and obvious satire
About Fukushima, but the last shot will haunt me forever, I think. You know, when Godzilla is finally here and wrecking havoc, and there's a should I spoil the final shot of the movie? It's been out for a while, right?
So
there's
like
the final shot.
Spoiler alert for the film, the 2016 film Shin Godzilla. Anyway,
it's the final shot of that movie. They zoom in on I think it's his back or his tail, and you see that like he's just made of corpses, just like these charred human corpses. Mm-hmm. From the nuclear disaster, and it just like closes on that.
It's fucked up.
Yeah,
Anno, man, Anno. He's gonna get you every time.
Every time.
That movie is incredible. It's IMO is easily the best Godzilla movie. Like, easily the best. He really. It was a huge hit too. Like,
yeah,
giant success. The monster effects are all fucking amazing. Godzilla looks genuinely frightening and like weird. Yeah. Like,
I know people were probably critical of his kind of like pasty googly eye or whatever. But
yeah, but like that's really unsettling, and you're gonna fucking remember that design. Like, it's not just noise. It's not just like Marvel CG goop. It's like you are gonna remember these freaky ass designs. They're gonna stay with you.
He has kind of like a nymph stage, I guess is what I would call it. Like, where before he goes like full lizard, he's just sort of like dragging himself on the ground and pushing himself forward with his limbs and kind of like swaying side to side and just like crashing it. I thought that form was almost creepier.
Yeah.
There's something about it that was just really like, I don't know, just very, very unsettling.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. That stuff, like I thought it all worked really, really, really well. Like really, really strong images that are hard to get out of your head afterward. That's visual design. Like we're so used to just CG muck, like samey looking CG muck that,
yeah, you did see all of that with like practical effects?
Most of it's practical, yeah. And when you, well, a lot of it is CG. It's just when you had dedicated creature designers where they're like, okay, we want this to look fucking weird. It can't just be the same old shit. That movie is something else. Really good stuff. We've got a big two-parter on the entire career of Anno up right now in anticipation of a little show called Evangelion that drops on Friday. Check that shit out. It's a pretty good retrospective if you're curious about all of his other work, or if you just like want to see everything this artist has made. It's a pretty good guide. Anything else?
As far as movies,
I haven't really
sat down and watched anything.
I'm seeing Toy Story 4 in a couple hours here.
Oh really? You're gonna okay.
I'm curious. Well, of course, I'm gonna go see that.
Okay,
like the minute
I guess
it opens.
I've managed to stay out of a lot of the marketing for that. So all I really know about it is that there's
which is
food.
Weird because you have children, I do not.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, no, I'm curious to see it. I loved Toy Story 3. I thought it was great, but they're all good. People have this weird thing about Toy Story 2 not being as good, but frankly, it's great, so I don't know what they're talking about.
I feel like that's the only one I haven't seen. I've seen 1 and 3, but not 2.
How were you able to understand the third one?
I don't know. I think I just sort of filled in the gaps.
It repeats a lot of the same themes. Frankly, repeats a lot of the same themes. But
I liked 3. I remember, feeling a sense of closure with 3.
Yeah, you'd think so, but here comes another one. Funny thing about Toy Story 4 is that it started life, it was going to be directed by John Lasseter, Uncle Touchy, as they call him. And the entire original script was an ode to his wife, like his marriage. Like it was supposed to be like Woody and Bo Peep are like John Lasseter and his wife. So that all got thrown in the garbage.
Yeah, how the Lasseters, are they still...
So that all got thrown out as far as I know. And I'm very curious. The reviews are all positive, but animated movies like that, especially Pixar stuff, it always gets like a bump. I believe Finding Dory also got good reviews, and that movie was paste.
Yeah, like, I've only seen that one on home video. I mean, I went and saw
oatmeal.
The original in theaters, and
Yeah. Everybody like claims that they love Finding Nemo.
Uh-huh.
It's not my favorite. Like, it's all right. It's fine. But
I mean, I feel like my connection with it is more, I like nature documentaries a lot, and especially ocean nature documentaries. Like, that's my jam. I like to put that on before I go to sleep and stuff. It's just, fish. So I like it.
I don't know, fish.
I like it as a narrative taking place in my favorite environment.
Oh, okay. See, maybe that's why I love The Lion King so much. Because for me, fish. For me, it's cats. So,
right.
I can.
Yeah.
Like when I watch nature documentaries, I watch the stuff about the savannah mostly. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, people loved that. But in terms of like Pixar sequels, there really hasn't been a good one in quite a while. I thought The Incredibles 2 was bad. Didn't like Finding Dory. Monsters University was okay, I guess. It was fine.
See, I remember liking The Incredibles 2 okay.
Really?
I liked the mom's arc in it.
It was much stronger in the one of the earlier, that would have been an interesting story, but it kind of took out what made it interesting, I think. Yeah, it wasn't a bad movie. I just didn't like it. It had nothing for me.
Yeah.
Nothing. And it felt like at every turn, it was just about to say something about something.
Yeah.
And then thwarted by plot. It felt like a really compromised film. Brad Bird expressed some frustration on the junket trail for that movie. And I don't think he's going to go back to it. Like anytime he would get a question like, what's going to be in The Incredibles 3? And he's like, am I allowed to make something else? It's like, not after Tomorrowland, motherfucker.
Are they ever going to do that Big Hero 6 sequel? I'm surprised.
Probably. I mean, I guess. Did you like Big Hero 6?
My son really liked it when it came out.
Yeah. No, that stands to reason.
I like Baymax as a design.
The movie didn't do anything for me. It felt like a Marvel movie for children, which is totally fine. And it also felt like a toy commercial for a lot of its runtime. But
yeah, we have some of the toys, so that probably worked.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Disney, on your successful conquering of popular culture. Let's see. What did I see? I saw the film Booksmart.
I've seen a lot of previews for that. Yeah. I'm really skeptical of comedies, like 9 times out of 10.
Really? Not a comedy person?
Yeah. I'm just too dark inside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I myself am also strange.
So I haven't seen it. It looked like it was cute. It looked like it was,
it was fine. Okay, look, call me a snob, but if the joke is like lame white girl affecting hip hop swagger is the joke, I find that hacky.
I didn't know that was the joke.
It's just kind of the vibe a lot of the time. they do that joke a few times, and then it's kind of the vibe of the film for a lot of its runtime. I thought it was hacky for the first two thirds. It was just like, here's a bunch of jokes I've seen in other rowdy teen movies, except this time it's two white girls. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, overachieving white girls. They did a really, one of them is gay, and they portray that really, 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 really well. It's done that aspect of it was super relatable and it was handled really well. And the last third is good. I really enjoyed the last third. It kind of came together for me, but they literally just lift jokes from American Pie and the film can't hardly wait. And to me, it didn't feel so much like homage as it was like, hey, remember this joke from that movie? Like, I sure do.
Let's give this another run. Yeah. Maybe we're too old for the movies.
Oh, they're definitely.
Everyone sitting to watch it doesn't know those jokes.
I'm way too old for that movie. Yeah. But it was entertaining. Yeah. What else did I see? I saw the movie Late Night, which is...
I heard good things about that.
Very good. If you like show business movies or movies about comedy... you will enjoy it. It's also only 100 minutes long, which feels like a miracle in this 3-hour Avengers age of ours.
Yeah,
A movie that is only just over an hour and a half feels like, wow. And I have the rest of the day.
I still have the rest of my day.
Yeah, I can still do
things.
The
lighting hasn't changed outside since I went into the theater.
I don't have a great bushy beard upon exiting the theater.
Yeah,
it was refreshing. So, but if you like, I feel like that's the pitch. It's like, do you like movies about show business? Do you like realistic movies about show business? Do you like movies about comedy? Do you like movies about comedians? Then you will enjoy it. You will have a good time. It's very, very well written. The performances are all super good. Very enjoyable. It's an Amazon Studios thing, which means it'll probably be on Amazon Prime in like a month and a half. So,
all right, I'll probably catch it then.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of television as well. I was raving about the show Good Omens to you, and then you watched it.
Yeah.
And you said you finished it, right?
I did. I finished it yesterday.
What'd you think?
I did. So I feel like really the best part of it is the central relationship in the show.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I like David Tennant. I watched him. Now, I'm not a Doctor Who person, but I watched him in Broadchurch. I don't know if you watched that, which is a very, very serious British drama about child murder. And he plays a detective with a heart condition who, like, doesn't let anybody in. But in this, he's not that at all. So
no,
it was a completely, like... it was like a 180 watching him in this, but I really enjoyed it. And his chemistry with the other actor. Who's the other actor?
Michael Sheen.
Yeah. Michael Sheen. Yeah. And I like all the angel, like,
yeah, me too.
Demon mythologies, window dressing stuff. That was fun.
That's just, I was laughing and clapping through that whole thing. Like, it just tickled me. Like, I don't know what it was about it, but it was like, here's all my favorite fantasy elements. And it has this real like shrug, fuck you vibe the whole time. Like,
and the entire soundtrack is Queen.
Yeah, like, it's super great.
Which is great.
It's also really intense the whole time. Like
the soundtrack?
No, the show. It's emotionally, it's pretty intense a lot of the time. Like it jumps around a lot. Like, especially Tennant he's at like a 12 for that whole show.
Oh yeah, yeah. He doesn't get any like time to like stop and breathe. Like, he's either like really angry or he's swaggering around or you know.
Like, I really would love to see what it reminded me most of was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay.
And now I think I only ever read, I think I read about half the book, the original book, and I think I was in high school and it didn't quite imprint on me.
Yeah, I read the first book, but I was in middle school. So even longer ago.
Well, I meant Good Omens. I read Hitchhiker's Guide.
I've read it a few times. I haven't read Good Omens at all.
Yeah. The tone on this and the execution, if they did Hitchhikers like this, that would be great. Like, that would be perfect. Because I thought the casting and the tone, and especially just the tone of the dialogue and the delivery, I just thought it was flawless. I was like, how could you make something better than this? Like, it's so snappy and fun and like... they're kind of reacting how normal people would sort of react in a situation like that, but it's heightened and cartoonish. Like, man, John Hamm shows up. It's super good.
John Hamm shows up and is very hammy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Everyone's having a good time. Everyone's having a good time.
I watched when I watched the credits. I mean, he's only in it for like a split second, but Benedict Cumberbatch is the voice of Satan.
He is. Yeah. That's man. That shit was so good.
Yeah. I liked the demon design in general. Like the two demons, two or three we see the most. Like one of them's just got like a lizard on his head, and the other one's got like this kind of gross looking frog. And then there's Beelzebub, who has like boils on her face. They're just gross looking. They're just gross.
Yeah, they're super gross looking. And by you know by contrast, David Tennant is a fallen angel, so he's not as grotesque as they are, and they're sort of contrasting these two things next to each other. It worked really. The visual design, I thought, you know, some people were complaining that I guess they didn't like the costumes or something like that. I didn't have any issue. I thought the production design on it was actually really good. And like,
yeah,
it looks great for it, especially for something that's that ambitious. Cause it is the story on that thing is fucking ambitious. And like, you're doing this in any format depicting both heaven and hell and like the Garden of Eden and like all of this stuff. Like that's some
hell
ambition.
Like, it looks sort of like, I don't know what you would call it, like some sort of abandoned warehouse,
full
of leaky pipes and bad lighting, and
yeah. And then heaven just looks like the lobby of a tech company, like, you know. That's super good. I really loved it. If you enjoyed Devilman Crybaby, but you want to laugh instead, I would say watch Good Omens. You will enjoy yourself quite a lot. Anyway, what other TV did I? Man, I watched a bunch of crap. Jeez, a ton of other stuff, but we should totally talk about some anime because there's a lot of it.
I have
to discuss.
Watched a lot of that recently.
Yeah, all right. So the stuff that I've been watching, we'll talk about at the end, but you've been watching a few more things than I have. Let's pick a show. We'll start with that one.
Oh, okay. Well, then why don't we start with Demon Slayer?
Yeah, all right. So how's that going?
I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, it's very Shonen Jump, and it feels like we're kind of getting how often did you say we usually get a Shonen Jump adaptation? Because I feel like we get a lot more now than we did before. There's just like, you know, Naruto before, and we've had Bleach and like these sort of long running ones. But now we get a lot more of these like shorter divvied up per season, a Shonen Jump adaptation. Like we get Dr. Stone coming up real soon. But with this one, it's very Shonen Jump in that, you know, you have your main character and he's going to build up his fighting abilities and he's got special sword skills and he's got to defeat all the bad demons because he wants to heal his sister. That's like the generic plot.
Sure.
What makes it fun to watch, I think, is really UFO Table's animation work on it. They make his special attacks are really cool. They kind of have this like cutout feel to them, I guess.
It's a little like woodblock.
Ukiyo-e
prints, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's set in the Taisho era, so it feels natural to have it there.
Sure.
And I think I maybe have said it on one of the times before, I really dig the Taisho era because it's got that cool fashion blend of like classical Japanese, but also some Western influences. So you get some of the cool hats and like mixture of like big heavy coats, but also kimono and the like geta sandals and stuff. And the enemy design is also really, really cool. The demons themselves like are each very individual looking. The one that you see early on in the show is just sort of like this massive like spider human thing. And then he just recently finished fighting a chick who, what's that character from Mortal Kombat?
It's got like Melina.
No, I'm thinking of the one with like six arms.
The really tough one. The Goro, the Lady Goro. I don't know. Lady Goro.
She's like that. But then she's also got these kind of toy balls that have like a ringing bell sound in them that she throws really fast and like knocks off people's limbs. She like knocks off a dude's head with one of them. So I mean, it's pretty, as far as like the action goes, it's also pretty brutal. So you know, it's intense, but it's also fun. But they just introduced I guess what I call him is the equivalent of Mineta from My Hero Academia, like this really, really whiny.
Oh, good. Everyone needs the Mineta character
the
to show
was
up.
Missing. That's definitely what it needed.
I guess that's like a Shonen Jump thing where like, here's a really obnoxious, horrible character that you, every minute he's on screen, you wish he wasn't.
Yeah. So he just showed up and I'm, you know, really want him to leave. go. Just get off the screen.
Yeah. Probably my least favorite Shonen Jump trope is the super obnoxious and or pervert. And the character is also usually a pervert.
Yeah. Like, so, he's not a pervert to the like degree that Mineta is, but I mean, he's introduced by trying to cry / whine his way into getting a girl to marry him, and like he won't leave her alone. So he's still like, he's
still that character, like just different, executed a little differently.
Different coat of paint, same thing.
I only watched the first one of those, and it was fine. It's very Shonen Jump. Didn't really grab me. But I'm enjoying, you know, reading the reviews and stuff. And like, yeah, the animation is really nice. I do like what they're doing with the special attacks. It looks cool.
I'm wondering because I don't know how long it's supposed to run for, but
it's two seasons, right? It's going to be two core.
Is it two core?
Yeah, I think it runs until the fall, because I'm still planning features around it.
Okay.
And the people that I'm working with are like, well, this goes all the way to the fall, so it's okay.
Yeah, in the back of my head, I've been trying to pay attention, because, you know, UFO Table got in some tax trouble recently.
Sure, but I don't think that means they're going to shut down production.
Probably not. I don't know. It was a lot of money, but... And someone did step down, but I don't know if it'll affect anything at all.
Nope, Gainaxis still exists.
Does it, though?
Yeah, well, sort of.
Last I checked, they were, like, growing tomatoes and running a vegetable stand. I'm not kidding.
No, I know you're not. But they reconstituted into, like, Gaina or something, like there's no X anymore or something like that. I don't know, whatever.
What I understand is, like, there's Gainax, and then there was Fukushima Gainax. And then Fukushima Gainax was bought and changed his name to Gaina. I think there's also still Gainax, but there's also still Gonzo.
Right.
So I don't know.
What do they even do anymore?
They're supposed to, I was looking at the encyclopedia last night because I'm a dork, and I was making sure everything was up to date for the new season, like the premiere dates.
Mm-hmm.
And everything's up to date except for the one show that Gonzo is responsible for still has never released date yet. It's supposed to come out this summer. So.
Maybe it won't.
Maybe it won't.
We'll see. All right, Demon Slayer, what? Anything else? What else?
Oh, okay. I'm watching Fruits Basket.
All right.
I also
How's
feel like there's not a lot to say about Fruits Basket. It's very cute, and the characters are cute, and they went to a hot spring in the last episode.
Uh-huh. Have you read the comics?
I haven't.
I
watched the original TV series, but I haven't read the comics.
I stalled out pretty hard on the comics because I got distracted by a bunch of other comics. Maybe I'll go back to it. I don't know. I liked Fruits Basket. It's cool. I'm not watching the show. I kind of feel like, well, just read these comics.
Right.
I don't know. I'm kind of getting to a place where unless like I'm deeply in love with something, if I've already read the comics and the show is just the comics...
Yeah.
Well, maybe I don't need both. Like,
yeah,
maybe I don't. Maybe I don't need to experience this twice. There's so much to see that it feels like, you know, experiencing the same thing twice in just a different format. Unless I'm a super fan, I don't really need to.
There's some sort of like unique, you know, like I guess the closest thing I can think of is like Sailor Moon. The anime and the manga are almost not comparable. They're almost like different things. So,
yeah. And even Sailor Moon Crystal like doesn't quite.
No.
Yeah. Do it.
We don't talk about that show, Zach.
We don't. Does Sailor Moon fans just decide they hate it and like they've disowned it?
Yes. Me.
No one ever.
I'm sure people are going to get in the comments. They're gonna be like, it wasn't that bad. It was bad though. It was.
No one
boring.
Ever talks about it. When people talk about Sailor Moon, they talk about the '90s one, and that's it. They do not bring up
Crystal
Sailor Moon Crystal.
Boring. That I mean, they didn't. The manga on its own has, it feels like an outline for a really great story. And I enjoy it in its own right and the art and whatnot, but it's not filled in. It ran in Nakayoshi Magazine. It's a magazine for like little girls. You're not going to get the same sort of depth that you get from like the 90s show where they decided to like fill in some of the blanks. Well, Crystal doesn't fill in any of the blanks, so it's very bare bones.
Very directly supervised by Takeuchi herself, of course.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Turns out the 90s show turned into like something that was kind of into something that really spoke to people. And like, if you just go back to the source material, it's still kind of So,
yeah.
Well, people also bitched a lot about the Sailor Moon Crystal's award-winning animation.
Yeah.
Which the broadcast version, like, didn't they fix it up for the Blu-ray, but like not enough? Like,
I mean, so I bought the first season on Blu-ray purely for, I don't know why I did, because I have a problem. But I bought the first one on Blu-ray. I've never watched it. I don't actually know if it's much better or not.
Well, the odds that you would even remember at this point, like, that show feels like it.
I was camping, you know, they were airing those episodes once every 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And I was watching them on, like, date of airing when the show first came back. Like, I was hyped when it was announced, and then they pushed it back a full year before it ever premiered, and,
Yeah, that was kind of a mess. One, maybe we'll try again at some point, but why bother?
They're supposed to be movies. They're supposed to be movies, but...
Sailor Moon Crystal movies?
Yeah, yeah. To cover the fourth arc, it's supposed to be like a pair of movies. And they've trickled out a little bit of information like every year. We'll probably get some new info like next week, because every time they announce stuff, it's during Usagi's birthday celebration event on June 30th. So, you know, maybe.
Usagi's birthday celebration, huh? How old is she now?
Well, older
she's got to be in her 40s, right? Like,
yeah, I think so.
If she was 16,
she was 14 when the manga started
in 19. And I know. Well, when was that?
Early 90s.
So like 91.
Because the TV series I think premiered in 92. So yeah, like 91 ish.
You know, it's there's the magic box that can tell us.
Yeah,
when manga start. She was 14 as of December 28th, 1991.
Uh-huh.
So 1991 was 28 years ago. Yeah.
Just do 1991 minus 14, and then that's her birth year, and then subtract that from this year.
Well, it's been 28 years since 1991.
Okay.
Because 2021 is 2 years from now, right? So,
okay.
So 28 years, 38. Plus, yeah, she's in like her early 40s. She's like a little older than me.
Okay.
So she's probably got a pack a day habit and polishes off a bottle of Tubuck Chuck at the end of every day. Well, anyway.
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 We were talking about Fruits Basket.
We were talking about Fruits Basket. Froob. The Froob, as we call it.
Yeah,
I'm just going to keep reading the comics, I think. I'm sure everybody says the show is a great adaptation, and based on what I saw, sure seems like it, but just going to keep reading. I can read faster.
Yeah.
Then it'll take me to watch a 22 minute episode of The Froob. But apparently the production quality hasn't like dropped through the floor or anything.
No, it's looked great. Every episode's looked great. I haven't noticed like anything really wonky or whatever. Are you a Yuki or a Kyo guy?
Kyo. What a stunner that is, I'm sure. Do you have a favorite character?
Oh, well, if I have to pick between those two, it's definitely Kyo. But I also really like the cow.
Oh, sure. Well, everyone kind of likes the cow.
Yeah. Although, I'll admit that, like, the dog guy has grown on me upon this revisit. I don't know if it's because I'm older, but...
Well, this stuff all gets recontextualized as you age, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, big time. And you have been watching Attack on the Titans.
Yeah.
Which is in heavy discourse mode right now.
It is.
Woo! It is.
Because, you know, they went in the basement. And boy, there's some stuff in that basement.
And it turns out that it's anti-Semitic. What's your take? So just give me your take on that. Because surely you've been paying attention to the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been paying attention to the discourse. There was a piece that went up on Polygon, and there's been a response piece that went up today, and I've, you know, thought about
also
those.
Also on Polygon?
I think it's on Polygon.
Wow, okay. They printed a rebuttal to their own editorial? Okay.
No. The rebuttal was just written by someone I follow on Twitter on his own blog.
Oh, I see. Okay. But they didn't print it on Polygon. Okay, right. Okay. That would have been like, whoa, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying.
Okay, so the cat that's been let out of the bag is that... Am I just spoiling things?
Yeah, just Attack look. Titan, spoilers spoiler. For Attack on Titan. I will put it in the show notes. Okay, I don't really... I frankly don't want to... I don't want to sit through it, so I'd rather you just tell me.
I'm just going to tell you. Okay, so the Titans are a, I'm going to say they're a race of people, even though they look exactly like humans, called Eldarins. They have, their genetics allows them to become Titans. The in-universe history is that the regular humans hate the Eldarins because at one point they oppressed them, but they were able to defeat them in a war, and now all the Eldarins are kept in a ghetto and they have to wear armbands with stars on them. And then they decide that, you know, that the history that they've been told for why they're being segregated and oppressed and treated unfairly by everyone is wrong, actually. That's a lie. And they're going to rise up and defeat their oppressors.
Sure.
And their oppressors have been taking them to kind of like an Alcatraz of sorts called Paradise Island, where they inject them with stuff that causes them to become Titans permanently, the mindless ones, and they just let them run amok on the island. So that's where the Titans come from. That's where the Titan that ate Aaron's mom was actually his dad's first wife. So there's that.
It's a small world.
Yeah.
What a funny coincidence.
Right. So I don't know if it's anti-Semitic. I think it's just very, very messy. I think maybe no one talked to Jewish people while writing it.
Oh, yeah. What a shocker.
So, like, I don't know that it's intentionally anti-Semitic or fascist, necessarily. I just think that it's very messy, and no one really thought about how making the big reveal be that the man-eating monsters are actually Jews might play out.
God, why did he go with armbands with stars on them? What the fuck is wrong with you? Don't use that imagery. Do not use it. Unless you are making a documentary about the Holocaust, do not fucking use that imagery. You can't get away with it. You can't get away with it. It's not an easy shorthand for oppressed people. You can't do it.
Right.
Like I've seen a lot of takes on this. Like, a lot of them. And it seems like the most reasonable one is, like, I don't think he's a fascist. I think he's being really fucking careless and is struggling with his own attraction to fascist imagery. And
I've heard he's made statements in a blog or something maybe before the manga was ever serialized. I don't know that.
Right. So there's this rumor that people lean on where these posts that no one can see, and there's no receipts on any of this. It's just someone, from what I understand, there's no receipts on that. It's just, I heard he said that. I heard he said something sort of vaguely pro-fascist or vaguely anti-Semitic on some blog somewhere.
Or it was an imperialist sympathizer.
Yeah, something that led people to believe that he fell on the side of the, you know, Abes of the world, you know, the imperialists. There's, again, no receipts.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be like, now it's fucking canceled. Because, well, I mean, I want to stress, if there are receipts out there on this dude and he's totally an imperialist, I would love to see him. Like, send him my way. I don't question at all that it could totally be possible. I'm not suggesting that it's not possible. I could totally be wrong about this. It's just, that's the take that I see out there. That seems like it's the most, I don't know, even-handed to me.
There was so much hype built up, but how long did we have to wait? Like 4 years?
It was like 2-3 years, something like that, right? It wasn't just a year. It was several years.
Yeah.
And when it came back, the animation was like spectacular, but by then people were just like, oh yeah, I remember Attack on Titan.
Right. So we've been waiting for the basement reveal. Anime watchers have been waiting for the basement reveal for, it feels like, at least half or more, better part of a decade.
Right. And what was down there was like the sort of half-baked.
What was down there was his dad's diaries.
Thoughtless that, like, fucking metaphor. The
story. Yeah.
Thoughtless allegory that's either intentionally or not. Just like, whoops.
Like, I think his bigger message is supposed to be that, like, war begets war and the oppressed become the oppressor and it's all cyclical and, you know, the people who suffer are the innocents that are caught in the middle of it, you know.
The oppressed become the oppressor is something you have to be real fucking careful with.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful not to paint too broad. That is not a generalizable statement.
Right.
That is like Bioshock Infinite ass shit right there, where it's like, oh, but what happens if you help the oppressed people? See, they might become bad. Like, yo, you're making an argument for not helping anyone. You better be real fucking careful. Like, that is something where, like, there are few authors qualified to make that kind of case. And if they're making that kind of case, they are making a granular case that is not broadly applicable. Like, because it's not, that is not a broadly applicable statement.
Right.
That the oppressed will become the
oppressors. I think his theme was trying to be something like, you know, if you hold vengeance in, bad things happen. Like,
well, I think he was trying to.
I think
should probably be clearer than that at this point.
Right. So,
how much longer does that shit have?
Because right now, the in-universe history is that what, like, humans were really, really bad to the Titans, and then that made them mad because it was awful. Like Aaron's dad's sister, they fed her to dogs. She was like 9.
How dark and brutal.
Right.
And
so
shocking. What a cruel world.
Right.
It's so cruel.
Because they left their ghetto, their restricted zone that they are forced to live in.
Well, I'm not
it's
going.
It's just
never mind. I'll get someone else to write about Attack on Titan.
Yeah.
As I have done lo these many years. That sounds pretty disappointing. Like, even if it's not straight up, like, oh, whoops, fascism. Oh, whoops, anti-Semitism. Even if it's, like, it just doesn't, not in the mood.
It plays with a lot of the stereotypical Jewish conspiracies, too.
Yeah, which is fucked up. So, like, don't do that.
Has he knows those, or is it just, you know, he...
I think if it gets into that territory...
Yeah.
Unless he's being extremely clear, you don't have a really great reason to just automatically say, give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, right. Oh, he couldn't have known. Well, what do you mean he couldn't have known? Well, you knew.
Yeah.
What's so different about you and this guy? Like,
yeah, we both have access to the internet.
Did he not do any research at all? You're saying he just came up with, like, no, come on. No. You can't, on this stuff, like, It's just because they're Japanese or something like that. Like, is that why they're automatically being given the benefit of the doubt? Like,
I mean, I do think that has something to do with it. Yeah,
probably. I've seen that happen a lot where, like, an anime will be like, well, not a lot, but I've seen it happen where it's like an anime will be pretty explicitly like kind of racist. Like, for instance, the Irregular at Magic High School.
Like, oh, I didn't watch that, but heard lots.
No, I didn't watch. I do not cast aspersions on me. I did not watch it either. But the plot, I read a lot about the plot because I saw, like, the first two episodes of it and said, like, this seems vile to me.
Yeah.
And as I kept reading, like, it is wildly fucking racist against Koreans and Chinese people.
Yeah.
Pretty much the entire time. But, like, fans of it will be like, oh, no, it's not political. And it's like, where does this come from? It's obviously fucking political.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's this weird, like, exoticization of Japan where they can't also have, like, fucking scrub lords with bad takes.
Sure.
There's plenty of scrub lords with bad takes, and they know everything you know. They're just people. They're just fucking people.
Yeah. Anyway. There was a light novel and television adaptation that got just straight up canceled because the author had said horrible stuff about Koreans on his Twitter account.
Yep.
And it got axed. It was actually one of the few times I remember... Like, I watched it happen because we covered, you know, the controversy on Twitter. And it wasn't very long after that where the cast came out and they're like, no, we're not doing this. And I'd never seen a Japanese cast actually come out and say, we're not doing this show.
Yeah, I wish they'd done. There's a few I wish they'd have done that for.
Yeah, yeah. And right after the cast did that is when they're like, yeah, we're not publishing this anymore. Also, the anime is not happening. And I remember because the book was licensed for English release, too.
Yep.
By Jane Novel Club or something, I think. And so then they had to make a statement, and it was just...
Yeah, Aniplex released all these big, lavish box sets of it, and eventually those stopped coming. So anyway, so thanks for the heads up on Attack on Titan. I think I'm going to skip it. And
yeah.
I'll wait till I'll get all the takes on the end and see how it goes.
You could just read the comics.
Nope. Nah, it's all right.
Nope.
I got enough. Okay. Do you know how many fucking comics I have to read?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I haven't read any of the comics for it, but
I still haven't even started the second volume of Yuri Seatsura. All right, so I'm gonna get to that next. Then I'm gonna read Yamato finally. That's gonna be good, I think.
Is that Leiji Matsumoto.
Yeah, Matsumoto. The classic original. I have three. I have all three volumes of Captain Harlock. I got to get through. I got to, you know, I got to stroke my beard and read my old 70s comics. I have all the Eva manga, too, and I've never actually read the whole thing.
Man, I used to buy the floppies of that.
Yeah. The right to left ones.
I was a young kid with a comic subscription box. And one of them was
your pull list. Ava. Your pull list had Evangelion and Inuyasha, and
I didn't have Inuyasha. It wasn't out yet.
Ranma,
I don't think
Ranma 1/2.
I did have Ranma 1/2 floppies, Cardcaptor Sakura floppies, Sailor Moon floppies,
Mei Zanikoku.
No, nope, not that one.
You could still find piles of those for like 5 cents a piece or something like. Well, it's fucking worthless. Like flipped.
Oh, I had Oh My Goddess too.
Oh yeah. Woo. Isn't that still going?
No.
Did it finally end?
He ended that comic a while back.
Did he finally marry his mom? I mean, Belle Dandy.
He married some 20-year-old cosplayer, I think.
No, Keiichi in the story. In the story.
I thought you meant the author. The author married a 20-year-old cosplayer. No, I don't know if Keiichi... Sure, he married Belle Dandy, I bet. Yeah.
Oh, my goddess. God, that ran forever.
Yeah, it did.
And eventually, like, of course, I didn't read past the first... You remember that old OVA?
Yeah.
That was like the start and stop of my interest in Oh My God.
Yeah, I've never seen any of the TV series or any of that stuff.
Who would waste their time? Like, 3 steps forward, 10 steps back. There's a romance.
Pure was the only thing I was reading for, like, by the end of it, and she's like, not even of the main three. Well, I like Erd.
Yeah, one dimensional characters.
Belle Dandy can just. You know,
whatever. Belle Dandy.
Make me lunch or something. I guess that's all she does.
She's just his mom. She's just his mom. Ugh. Anyway. So, let's talk about this television series called Sarazanmai, which wrapped up just like an hour ago.
Yeah, we both watched
final
it.
Episode. What did you think of Kunihiko Ikuhara's 11 episode Sarazanmai?
I thought that it was very focused compared to a lot of his other work. Probably because they didn't give him. As much runtime.
I mean, is it a giving situation? Because this is really the conversation that I've been having with people about this is like, wait, was it the right length? Because a lot of it, the complaint about it for a while there was that this feels really rushed.
Yeah, I feel like it didn't stew in its themes enough.
It
needed to marinate a little more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a central theme of the show is the desire to connect and not to give in to despair, right? But did it ever feel like any of the characters were really in despair?
Yeah.
Like, did they ever get there, though?
They did it. Well, Toei did at the end.
Well, yeah, at the end.
And I feel like Enta kind of sort of got there. Like, sure.
I mean, he lashed out. I mean, he lashed out in his insecurity.
I feel like, what's their faces? The cops.
Mabu and Reo.
Mabu and Reo, like, there was certainly heavy despair there, I would say.
Yeah.
They did not get explicit about, I feel like in the last episode, well, okay. I feel like we're kind of jumping all over the place here.
It's fine.
I asked you, what did you think of this? And I guess, like, where would you rank it? In terms of Ikuhara's stuff.
In terms of anime or in terms of like Ikuhara's work, like where would I put it?
Yeah.
Okay. I would put it like at number 3, I guess.
Yeah, I think me too. It's like number 1 for me is Yurikuma, which just blew me apart. I did not expect Yurikuma Arashi to just like fucking shatter me into a million pieces, but it did. That show just wrecked me. And then next would be Utena and the movie. And then 3 would be Sarazanmai. And then I am not qualified to have an opinion on Penguin Drum because I need to rewatch it.
Okay.
I actually don't know how I feel about Penguin Drum. I need to see it again.
Okay. My rating would probably be Utena first, and then Penguin Drum, and then this, and then Yurikuma.
Oh,
last.
My beloved Yurikuma's at the bottom. How could you do it to poor, to poor Ginko? She's a bear. I think that show spoke to me most as like a man who didn't come out of the closet until his mid 30s.
Yeah,
like learning to accept yourself is tough. And that is largely what Yurikuma is about. It's okay to be a bear, Ginko. It's okay.
It's
Like, I needed to hear that.
Yeah.
So that show totally blew me apart. But you were right about Stars on My overall, I thought, like, really focused. Really focused. If you walk away from it being like, I'm not sure what that was about. Like, well, it's about balancing desire and connection and facing your potentially shitty future with surrounded by the people that you love and care about and caring about them. And relationships are real fucking hard. So it's going to be real hard work and you're going to fight and it's going to be tough. But if you care a lot and you put the work in and you allow yourself to love yourself, that's the only thing you can do. Yeah. And it felt like very realistic hope, like realistic hope in the end. But that is largely what that show was about. And like, there's a million rabbit trails you can go down. Like, sure. You know, everything in it, I think I compared it to a toy box full of sort of semiotic objects, or objects with semiotic meaning that's a little overflowing, it's a little overstuffed. Yeah. Like, it gets so, the ideas are sometimes so abstracted that, for me, it became a little disjointed, and I think that contributed to the feeling of it being a little bit too much crammed into a little too small a space.
I think that there's a part of it that's very Japanese that, you know, if you don't kind of know some of the like double entendres that are going on within that, it might not hit you quite as well. Like, for instance, I mean, this one's very obvious, but the otter character, it's usually translated as otter when he says uso. But I mean, that's a homonym for lies too. So, I mean, you have, and I feel like there's probably some more of that going on with like the individual zombies that maybe I didn't even pick up on, because some of those were so weird. They were so out there, the sort of fetish scenarios or whatever, that I felt like there had to be something I was kind of missing.
Well, so the show is absolutely like a woven basket of references and semiotic meaning. Like it feels like virtually everything has some kind of a double meaning that points at the main theme or the theme of whatever's happening on screen at the time. Like, but that is, I feel like the show can be appreciated on both the level where you are intricately taking apart that woven basket and examining each strand for the meaning that is in there. There is meaning in there, and you are rewarded for doing that. That's the way Ikuhara shows often work.
Right.
But on the other hand, you can also just say, ah, it's a nice basket. Yep, relationships are hard work, and dust yourself off, pick yourself up, face your bleak future, and it's better to not do it alone. You can just get that out of it.
Yeah.
You can just get that out of it. And walk away satisfied, I think. And I think the end, the last couple episodes made everything in it like super explicit what the themes were, like really obvious what the themes were, to the point where I thought it stuck the landing, and now I don't think it needed more episodes. It was fine. Like, I got what he was going for in the end.
I guess if I were to add episode count to it, it would be somewhere in the middle, as opposed to, like, I feel like the end is good. It's fine. You don't need to tack anything else onto that. It would just be sort of, like I said, stewing in the processing a little more.
It did feel to me like Ikuhara was more interested in Toy than anyone else.
Well, he's the best one, so.
Yeah, I related to all three of them in different ways.
Right,
The characters in that show are very relatable. I think he clearly cared about Toei the most, because it felt to me like he got the most screen time and had the most attention dedicated to his particular journey.
Right. He had a relationship outside of the main trio to deal with. The other two boys really didn't at all have any other, like, well, okay, no, that's not true. Kazuki had his sister, but, Toei had his relationship with his brother, and it did feel like that got, Maybe it's about the same amount of time as Kazuki.
It's
just that Toys was at the end, so it feels fresher than the first half. With
There's a few Kazuki's. I thought is it his brother or his sister?
Oh no,
it's his brother, right? He refers to him as him all the time.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, yep. You're right. Yeah,
it's his brother.
Yeah.
Way to get it wrong. Anyway,
sorry.
I'm gonna write an angry letter to your editor. it feels like, I think you're right, like those two relationships got the most, and the thing with Enta is that his thing was Kazuki, so and they dedicated an episode to that too, but it didn't quite get as much time, and the backstory with the Kappa and the otters didn't get that much time.
Yeah,
it didn't really get that much time. That stuff was all fairly kind of abstracted. I mean, I got it in the end. I got sort of what they were going for, but a little fuzzy on some of the details. But ultimately, yeah, like when I put it beneath Utena, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the show. I really enjoyed watching it. I definitely got what he was going for, and a lot of it really resonated with me. But it didn't kick my ass like Yuri Kuma did, and it didn't kick my ass like Utena did.
Yeah.
Those shows just blew me to pieces. This one was like, oh, I getcha. I feel the same way sometimes. You know, like
there wasn't any like image that I can kind of latch onto.
Yeah. I think
like,
it is a
castle it does, falling apart in Adolescence of Utena or the child grinder in Penguin Drum. There wasn't like something like that in this one where I was like, oh, that, I know what that thing is supposed to be. I've felt that thing before.
Yeah. I think the fights were generally the big Monster of the Week fight was generally supposed to be that. And ultimately it was, I think it was just too much of a joke. It was
too much
of a butt joke to come across as
iconic. They like bubble up in a fart.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's like, all right, a lot of that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, you know, I get you, but it just didn't quite get me in the same way. I think in terms of articulating how tough relationships are to maintain and how tough it is to find balance in yourself in order to maintain those connections that you have that's a beautiful articulation. And I don't think adding more episodes would have necessarily improved the way that the show articulated that. It probably would have just given you more character depth and maybe expanded the show's sort of emotional range, I guess. But ultimately, yeah, I'm certainly not smart enough to say, well, here's what you should have added to this giant piece of art. Like, that's not my call to make. So, yeah, the ending, I thought, like, he definitely nailed the ending. It reminded me a little of Nier Automata.
I haven't played that. But.
Where it's a speck of hope at the end of a very sad thing. Like, you're getting, but it's realistic hope. It feels realistic. It feels like, yes, things are very bleak, but here's this one thing about this that you can still have some hope for. You know, like it might not be okay, but you got to face it anyway.
Yeah.
It might not be okay, but you still have to get up, dust off, and face it. And hopefully you can do that with people you love. Well, that's okay. That's a nice message. It's very realistic. Yeah. It's very down to earth. So I respect that a lot. But, you know, Ikuhara is not one for, like, flawlessly happy endings. Like, the Utena movie is about as close as he gets to, like, oh, okay. Well, they're going to drive off into the wasteland, but at least they're together.
Right. It was kind of Toy had to do his time.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember as that scene was going, I was like, are they going to be there when he gets out? Are we going to even see him get out? Because it felt like anything was sort of a possibility that it was either going to end with, oh, well, he's taking
My eye kept drifting down to the progress bar. Like, how much is left? He's in jail now. How much is left? He's going to kill himself. How much is left?
So I was pretty happy that they were, even as sort of fantastical as that was, oh, we were waiting for you. And I was like, here, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even then, I'm still glad that, you know, I don't know, that he didn't drown, I guess is. Yeah.
You know, I you only get an Ikuhara show every couple years or so. Hopefully this one was enough of a success where they'll just keep giving him work. Because, I mean, he's got no shortage of ideas. So, even, you know, he does repeat himself a few times, but this one was, this was a lot more about interpersonal relationships than even Yuri Kuma was a lot about your internal life.
Yeah.
This was about how your internal life reconciles with the internal life of the people you love and how to maintain that connection even when you both have different desires. Like,
and I think it was purposeful to make the characters in the stage of life that they were too. Like, I feel like the hopefulness and almost sort of innocence to like the mistakes that they're making or the wrongs that they're committing is forgivable and feels more mutable because they're like 12 or 13, you know?
Yeah. 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 The more I think about it, the more I liked it. I still probably wouldn't bump it past Utena, and I just liked Yuri Kuma too much, but that number three slot, those are all clustered pretty tightly together, I would say.
Yeah.
The more I think about it, it's like, turns on my, you know, didn't blow me out of the water, but not everything has to do that, and it's frankly unrealistic to expect everything a particular artist make to totally blow you out of the water every single time. So, you know, not everyone can be Gen Urobuchi in Thunderbolt Fantasy.
That ending song is going to be stuck in my head for a long time, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, the ending was fantastic. Frankly, the music in that show was great. It was all really good. I liked all of it. Okay. Well, I think that about does it.
Okay.
That about does it. If you want to really go down the rabbit hole on the semiotics of Sarazan Mai, Jacob is writing his reviews. He's a little behind, but he's catching up. So now that the show's over, I'm looking forward to reading the rest of his stuff. He really gets granular. He goes for the whole thing. So check that out if you want to get even more in-depth. We kind of just skimmed the surface here. But yeah, hey, dude, thank you so much for coming on by.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.